Welcome to Behind the Scenes with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. We're talking with Dr. Stuart Altman and David Shackman about their new book, Power, Politics, and Universal Healthcare. And, you know, Dr. Altman and Mr. Shackman, I guess one of the questions I'm interested in is your views on what's happening in the Supreme Court and Obama's healthcare. Do you think that this may get repealed? And what impact do you think that decision is going to have on looking forward towards the future of universal health care in the United States?
I'm not a lawyer, and I don't pretend to understand all aspects of the Constitution, its implications. But what's clear to me, having listened to the debate, that the decision being made by the Supreme Court is a political decision and less of a legal decision. You could easily go either way on the individual mandate, but it looks like very strongly the majority of the sitting judges are going to repeal the individual mandate. There's some hope, and both David and I are cautiously optimistic that we could see a 5-4 vote that will continue the rest of the law and just take the individual mandate out, which would be a problem, but it would still maintain a very important set of components in the existing health reform.
It would expand the Medicaid expansion, which would about half of the 32 plus million would still have this new insurance.
Yes, that's correct. But also, even if we get by the Supreme Court, then we have to look forward to the election. And depending on what happens to the election, if Obama wins and he controls Congress, the law will go ahead. But if Obama wins and the Republicans control Congress, they can attempt to defund the act if they want to do so. And they may be able to do so through reconciliation with just a majority of 50 votes in the Senate. And then if the Republicans win and control Congress, it's quite likely that they'll follow up and do what they've been saying that they want to do, which is to repeal the act.
I just want to make it clear, it's much easier at times to be against things. But when it comes time for them to repeal the law, there is nothing to take its place. And I've been debating this, and people have the implication, well, there's another way that the Republicans are going to put forward a plan that will have universal coverage or close. There is no Republican plan. I've been part of this now for 40 years, and there is no Republican plan that brings us anywhere close to covering the 50 million Americans with no health insurance.
And so if we're doing a lot of what ifs, but if Obama wins the election, or if they don't, I mean, if we're able to move forward with this without the individual mandate, will the states, do you think enough states will step in to make statewide mandates, or how do you see this playing out?
Well, there are two very important parts that are still in the law. That one is what David talked about, which is the expansion of Medicaid, mm-hmm. which will cover about half of the uninsured. But there's also these exchanges that are being set up throughout the country that allow individuals and small businesses to buy more efficient health care subsidized by the federal government for people who have incomes up to 300-400% of poverty. So it gets you up to $50,000-$60,000. If you add the two of those together, you will cover about somewhat around 25 to 30 million people. So there's a lot in the law. There's also a 1,000 pages in the law that talks about and helps to restructure the healthcare system. Now, this is not normally the inside story of most people who are patients. But for those of you who are professionals, what's in the law that fundamentally changes the way medicine is financed and practiced, leading to much more comprehensive care, leading to doing away with the fragmentation that currently exists, is going to be terribly important going down the line.
Now you're talking our language. You're talking
right.
the language of family medicine. We love that. We love that language. But I guess one question, we've assumed that this is universal health care, the Obama's plan, but it's not. There's still 10, 15 million people who don't have insurance under this plan. Who are those people? Because it seems to me that perhaps for even if the plan is kept, this other 15 million Americans are going to be somewhat invisible for the next decade or maybe the rest of Christy and I's lives. Who are the people that don't have insurance still?
Well, about a third of them are illegal aliens. And of the remaining people...
there are going to be people that are going to fall through the cracks. There are going to be people who are above that cutoff point. They're going to be people who reject...
The working poor.
Yes. They're going to be... That's right. And who... You know, I need to go back to that individual mandate. Even with the individual mandate, the penalties were not that severe if you chose not to do it. And so the people who did the estimates assumed that there would be a segment of the population who could have qualified who will choose not to because they would have had to pay part or all of their part of the premium. So built into that 8 to 10 million is a combination of that group plus the illegals.
But let me add one thing, and that is the Massachusetts plan, which everybody but Mitt Romney calls the Romney plan, has also had a low penalty for not getting individual coverage. And, of course, it has the individual mandate. But in Massachusetts, the uninsurance rate is down to between 2 and 3%.
Very low.
Very low, by far the lowest in the country. It's practically universal coverage.
Which begs one question. You said one of the recommendations, and Christy asked this in the interview, that you would have for a future president, if they want to be successful, is to not expand access to care and cut cost at the same time. Mm-hmm. But you also say an additional prologue to your prologue or to the book or the epilogue is... Cost is what's looming out there on the horizon. And my wife and her practice this year, she's a dermatology provider, and her health insurance rates in 2012 are going up 40% in 1 year. It seemed as if we were in a place where we were expecting better access and reduced costs, but that's not the case. Comment on that, because I know it's a dilemma.
I just gave an interview just before this program about the Massachusetts. So the good news about Massachusetts, in spite of the critics, is that we were able to expand coverage without appreciably changing the cost growth, Massachusetts is a very expensive state, but our cost growth did not go up on a per capita basis. So the good news is you could have healthcare reform that doesn't make the healthcare cost problem worse. The bad news is it didn't make it better. Hmm. Yeah, you know, some people had hoped that by covering people, they would no longer go to the emergency department, they would get access to good primary care earlier, and therefore that would save money. There were a few instances of that. Unfortunately, and this gets right to the heart of the problem, which you know well, I'm sure, both of you, and that is we have a serious shortage of primary care physicians. So even though people get insurance coverage, doesn't mean they get access. And so they're continuing in Massachusetts, and I suspect around the country, are going to wind up in the same emergency departments. The big difference is they're going to get their bills paid, and they're probably going to get in there earlier. So we need to do more than what we've done under reform. Controlling healthcare costs is, in fact, much more complicated. And we'd have to have another broadcast for me to go into what has to happen and what the potential negatives are of trying to control costs. I was the first regulator in this country. I was very young, and I got beat up very badly in the early 1970s. And I have been part of trying to control costs for the last 40 years. I can tell you chapter and verse, it is a very difficult job.
Well, it's a complex factor in such a complex system, but certainly expanding the primary care workforce and focusing on quality is a key part of that. And so it's music to our ears to hear you saying that.
And you also both talk about in the end of your book that it takes a president to be determined and committed to making a difference despite and staying that path. And it sounds like the two of you have actually been determined and committed to helping people and presidents. And this book, Power, Politics, and Universal Healthcare, is a great contribution to that commitment and determination. So thank you for joining Behind the Scenes on Your Health.
Well, thank you. Thank you. This has been a pleasure for us as well.
Thank you so much.